Live from F102, this is Art As We Know It. Welcome to episode 5 of season 2. With this podcast, we hope to share our art knowledge and help inspire others to find the art in their daily lives.
Today on the podcast, we have Caden, Marcus, and myself, Nayib. Our main topic for today is Buddhist art. But before we dive into it, let's hear the answer to our trivia question from last week.
Last week's trivia question was, where was Buddha born? The answer is Lumbini, Nepal. Today in art history, the first public art exhibition at the Palais Royal in Paris was opened.
As Nayib said, today we'll be talking about Buddhism. First, let's start with his life. So, Buddha, he grew up in South Asia, and he had a very, very wealthy life at first. And he was very, very well off.
During his lavish life, like, he felt like he hadn't experienced a lot of the external world, the hardships, and so at one point he decided to give up his lavish life and just live in the forest for a while.
Yeah, he became aware of the suffering around him and became convinced that his mission in life was to free himself and others from the poverty and just everything going on in India at that time.
And his doctrine was called the Middle Way, mm-hmm. And it just discussed how we should avoid the extremes in life and just the worldly desires. This consisted of the Four Noble Truths: the truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, the truth of the end of suffering, and the truth of the path that frees one from suffering.
And going back to the doctrine, a lot of it developed because while he was in the forest, like living away from his lavish life, he encountered a lot of suffering by seeing an old man, a sick man, and a corpse. And so this really helped him develop his doctrine.
So before Buddha came, Hinduism was the most prominent religion in India. But during Emperor Ashoka's rule from 274 to 236 BCE, he made Buddhism the major religion in India, and it kind of spread from there.
So throughout world history, India has been very divided, and this was not solved easily at all. And one of the main things that solved this over and over again was religion. And Ashoka saw this, and he decided to try to unify India under the religion of Buddhism, which was much different than the religion of Hinduism, which came before it. And he decided to do this primarily through the building of stupas throughout India and throughout South Asia. And what a stupa is basically is a dome that is built of various materials, in mainly earthen materials, but it's something that you can't walk into. So unlike many temples or worship sites, it's not something you can walk into and pray in or worship in. It is something that you stay outside of and pray outside of. And the significance of a stupa is that it is supposed to contain either a relic of Buddha or his ashes or something very similar of very high importance. So this relic made all these stupas very important and very, very religiously significant. So through like spreading these throughout South Asia, connected South Asia under one sole religion, and allowed Ashoka to rule almost uniformly without doing a whole lot of work, because Buddhism was very self-functioning. You know, you avoided the extremes, and that was just a main part of the religion. So through doing this, he effectively conquered a very, very hard to conquer region with just religion. The downfall of this, however, was that he built so many stupas, he actually ended up bankrupting the state of India. The problem with this is that India, this big unified state, was spending so much money on its religious upkeep that it ended up not being able to take care of its citizens and other expenses. So this really was the downfall. However, the idea of a stupa didn't stop there. It spread to places like Sri Lanka, where the largest and tallest stupa is located, and places like East Asia, where the term and the structure pagoda is actually thought to be derived from a stupa. So this has spread widely in Asia, and it's very different from European and American ways of worship. And later, this religion spread from just South Asia to East Asia as well, but it took a different form, and this form also translated into different artworks.
So while Buddhism spread to not only Southeast Asia, but to East Asia, it took two forms. And the one that spread to Southeast Asia is known as Theravada Buddhism. And in this section of Buddhism, they saw Buddha as a man, not as a god. But the Buddhism that spread to East Asia was known as Mahayana Buddhism, where they saw Buddha as a savior, and they thought Buddha was someone who was concerned with a man's sorrow.
So Buddhist imagery and art first emerged in India during the Kushana period, and the first region was Gandhara, which was in northwest India, and it has influences in Hellenism.
And the other reason was Mathura, which was south of Delhi. This imagery was really influenced by Hinduism and Jainism.
While Buddhism was mainly in India, a lot of an icon art developed in which like Buddha wasn't depicted as a human, but rather as a symbol. And some of the symbols include the Bodhi tree, an empty throne, a horse with no rider, Buddha's footprints, and then the wheel of Dharma.
But whenever it spread to East Asia, it took a more anthropomorphic form. So the artworks in East Asia were more depicting Buddha as a human. It's artworks that you're likely to see today. So things such as like, you know, rub the Buddha belly. These things are the anthropomorphic form of Buddha. And that was really prominent in East Asia as opposed to South Asia.
And after Buddhist art spread, it was pretty prominent and had large influence. It lasted from the 5th century to the 1st century BC, and a lot of Indian artists who worked in the media created artworks from brick, wood, bamboo, just very like natural mediums.
And the reason why we don't see a lot of anthropomorphic art of Buddha in India is because a lot of the followers in India had this concept where they thought that Buddha had said not to depict him as a person, but rather as a symbol. And this was said in his Digya Nikaya, and it really stressed to his followers to not depict him as a human, but rather as a symbol.
However, whenever it spread to East Asia, as I said, the anthropomorphic form started showing itself. And what also showed itself was the depiction of bodhisattvas, which were people that reached nirvana, but then they decided that they would stay with others and help them out.
So some Indian Buddhist art that depicts an icon images of Buddha is the Mara's assault on Buddha with an empty throne in the dead center of the image. And it is found in Amaravati, India in the 2nd century. And so basically a little background information would be that Mara is a demon, and he was trying to eliminate Buddhism and what he stood for. So he sent, it is unclear whether he sent his daughters or whether his daughters came willingly to Buddha, but they were trying to entice him. And what this artwork is depicting is that moment when the daughters are trying to entice him into trying to eliminate Buddhism and Buddha in general. And what we see in the center is Buddha's empty throne. And there are a lot of people around him. It's all chaos, and a lot of figures are running towards Buddha's throne because, specifically in India, Buddha was seen more as of an enlightened figure rather than a god, or more of an esteemed figure, basically. And so they're all running towards him and trying to seek his like wisdom and help. And I think it's really important that he's in the center because it really emphasizes his position as an enlightened figure that really influenced India during that time.
So unlike the Indian artwork Naib just talked about, the Lishan Giant Buddha, one of the most notable Buddhist artworks, was constructed in the Mahayana style found in Eastern Asia. The story behind the piece was that a Chinese monk named Haitong constructed the giant Buddha in hopes that Buddha would calm the turbulent waters that plagued shipping vessels traveling down the river. And so the Eastern Asian sect of Buddhism saw Buddha not as a king or an enlightened figure, but more as a god and a savior. And they wanted to please him so that he would protect them and make the river safer to travel. This massive carving, spanning a height of 71 meters, represented Buddha as a powerful and almost supernatural figure, which the locals saw as a savior. They raised money and constructed the massive monument in hopes that the flooding would stop and that their community could be safe from natural disasters with Buddha's protection. And so it really shows that there's a difference between the Indian Eastern Asian style of art when representing Buddha and how they saw him as a different figure, and the artwork really shows that difference.
So although the difference comes where East Asia, they saw the figure of Buddha more as a god, and in South Asia, they saw him more as a person, both in both styles of art, Buddha is the centerpiece, and his importance is just paramount. As the empty throne shows, the seeking of guidance from someone who is no longer with us just goes to show how important he is in the culture and the society, and the creation of a massive structure representing one person just shows how much the people in Asia at the time looked up to Buddha, although in different ways.
This week's fun fact is that Buddha's first appearance as a human was in the first century AD, which was way after the founding of Buddhism.
And today's art history joke is, what were Duchamp's first words?
What were they?
Dada.
Next week's trivia question is, what is the sacred number in Hinduism?
Hey guys, want to know more about the works we talked about today? Check out our blog at www.artasweknowitpodcast.wordpress.com.
Thank you for tuning in to this part of the Religious Art Series. Next week, we'll be talking about Hindu art, which is the art that came before the time of Ashoka. See you then.
Bye.
Bye.